This week on RSBNB Update, we pick up the pieces after the Duel Arena's destruction. Our path of discovery takes us through light and shadow to Sentistan as we uncover who really destroyed the Duel Arena. Was it a part of a greater plan? This is RSBNB Update, episode 864, recorded Thursday, January 13th, 2022. Zamorak did nothing wrong. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. We're back again, back on the discussion train of Het's Oasis, Eye of Het, Part 2. Welcome back, Tanis.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us back this week is Earth for Round 2.
Hello.
I have an interesting way that you wound up on the show this week, but before we do that, I also just want to welcome Questcaping back for your first episode of the new year. Welcome back.
Hello, hello, hello.
Okay. Questcaping. Lore, quests, makes sense why you're here this week. 100% had full intention of bringing you on this week to discuss the roundup to Het's Oasis Part 1 and Part 2. I planned that from the beginning of the year. But, Earth, you're here for...
all of 13 days ago.
Yeah, you're here for Round 2. You're here for Round 2. I did the mini quest, and I said, yeah, go do the mini quest, and...
That's not what you said. You said, go do the mini quest ASAP.
Yeah, because
I
felt
said,
like...
okay.
Because I felt like there were some big ramifications of it.
Uh-huh.
And then you said, do you want me on the show again this week?
No, I don't think I asked.
You kind of just said that you were in.
Yeah.
Which surprised
me. You're welcome. Well, you said your New Year's resolution was to have me on more this year. Last year I was on once. I thought I'd just get it out of the way. Like, okay. I have fulfilled this goal.
Check.
And then you don't have to deal with Shane again?
For another year.
Nonetheless, we're going to discuss why this is so important, Het's Oasis, or rather, I've Het Part 2. But if you're joining us for the first time, follow along in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Join us in-game at Friends Chat, Bits Bytes, and of course, we also have our Discord running at rsbnb.com/Discord. All right, so I think it goes without saying that we need to jump straight into this mini-quest. I've Het Part 2. Is there any comments that either of you want to get out of the way before we start here?
Well, it was different from last week.
Yeah, last week was a fetch quest.
Yeah. I was very surprised at the... this felt like it needed to be a full quest.
Yeah, it did.
Truly.
It did.
Combine the two and make it a full one.
Yeah, and it would be fun if they did that. Yeah. Give us a quest point, give us the treasure hunter keys for it. I don't know why that wasn't done, but I think, as we said last week, the mini quest argument for this makes sense in terms of the compartmentalization, the first one.
The first one, sure.
Yeah, finding the actual artifact and whatnot and bringing it back to Ickler, and who was holding on to it until this week. And the goal of this week's quest was to try and figure out what the heck happened here with the Duel Arena, and in particular, why it ultimately sank, which makes sense that you can split them apart in that. And Ickloran's initial suspicion was that somebody tried to get to the Eye of Het before we could. And lo and behold, we have ourselves a little mystery here that we need to solve. So, with that, were there any introductory thoughts at this point about who might be behind this?
Not yet at this point.
All right, fair enough. Earth, anything?
Not yet.
All right. So you make your way through the oasis, and at the northeast end of it, you find a stranger, which is where the banking area is. And I'll just comment on that again. It feels weird that the bank is at the northeast end, but I guess that makes sense because that was the bank that the mage training arena people used. And the stranger here, you start questioning them about what might have happened with the sinking of the duel arena and the rumbling, and they say that they saw a fleet of aviancy flying over, and then, lo and behold, the shadow voice pipes in, says that she's lying.
Hi.
And then the light voice is back.
Love that.
Too, suggesting that, that suggests that we act naturally.
That is my favorite.
Yeah, it's a really...
I love that storytelling device.
It's really interesting how they managed to do that, and I think the first time we saw them was last year around this time with Azanadra's Quest,
yes.
Right?
Only a year with our personal Statler and Wardolf.
And if you look at it, at what was done here, if you're looking at the YouTube version of this right now, you see myself just kind of sitting here dumbfoundedly after having this conversation, because I was like, what? Why all of a sudden would our shadow and light voices be appearing here? But
it feels like they're a surprise every time they show up, which has been 3 times so far. Of course, the first time was the biggest surprise because it's finally happening. They're finally following up on this. But yeah, and it feels like they've been used sparsely enough.
Yeah, that's good.
To be consistently that's interesting. Good. And this time, them showing up in the middle of this strange, limited to the Oasis so far mini quest, what's gonna be led up to here?
That immediately, it's like, okay, Shane, I'll go do this mini quest. And I saw that, and I was like, hello?
And it was actually at that point, right when I was seeing the reveal for the light and shadow voices that I messaged you and said to go do the mini quest. Which I figured you'd appreciate, given where we were. But also, go ahead.
Can I just say, this is where I personally would have put the cliffhanger for Eye of Het 1.
Oh.
Yeah, that would have been better, wouldn't it?
So we at least know there's some good stuff going up. We know there's a mystery, and we've got a week for the lore community to go wild trying to solve it.
That's actually a really good idea. Now you also get the marketing team on that, and you could have had some really interesting stuff happening. Though they did do that with the Duel Arena stuff written in that language that was posted over the Christmas break. But I mean, heading into this from Christmas, it's kind of hard to put the marketing team on that over a Christmas period.
Yep.
But right next to where you question the stranger, you find a note, and you're guided to that note by the light voice. And it says, remain where you are and maintain surveillance. Keep an eye on the dog and wait for orders. And it was signed Ex Umbris Lux. And I'm gonna take us through this as we go through the quest, of course, but signing a note like that, I think we all kind of have an idea about potentially where that goes. Do you want to say it, or should I? Of what we were thinking, because it was very clearly pointing in the Zerosian direction. I feel
one of that lot.
Yeah, whether it be something directly Zerosian or something Inquisitors based, you know, that was the question about that. But following from this, you go in and talk with Ichlor, and because it was directly Zerosian, I thought, okay, I'm just gonna, you know, go see what's up in Sentistan. So I didn't actually go back to Ichlorin with that, but you do need to make a trip back to Ichlorin first for that, I believe. Before you can talk to Azanadra, I think.
Oh no, actually I heard Alaska saying she did actually go straight to Azanadra.
Okay. And the question, of course, is which Azanadra? And the answer to that is the Azanadra at the Glacier Front.
Yeah, I had trouble with that. Because you'd think he's right there.
Yeah.
Just walk right over there.
But every other version of Azanadra now is just some other Majorat in his cosplay.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the Azanadra you're looking for was a Wi-Fi router, Azanadra. But
sending signal to all of the Glacier fronts.
Look at what his head looks like. He looks like he's got a Wi-Fi router and four antennas on his head.
Hold, please.
Earth's about to have a revelation.
Yeah.
I hate you.
It was actually Sirion, I believe, who first suggested that. But nonetheless, you talk to Azanadra and your light and shadow voices pipe in again. And it's actually very early on here. You could have had the opportunity to accuse Azanadra of destroying the duel arena. Did you guys accuse him of doing it?
No.
I did not go for it. Because, yeah, everything here had been emphasizing how shoddy the Zerosian framing was. The
item name was badly hidden notes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either we've got the worst Zerosian left alive doing this, or it's not the Zerosians.
And if you examine it, it says you don't recognize the handwriting.
True.
I'm pretty sure we've had
notes from Azanadra before. Also, when you talk to Azanadra, he'll say it's a fake. I would like to point out this would have been perfect time for a Star Trek reference. Or is that not something Azanadra would do? I don't know.
But not something
it would be amazing for Azanadra to do, because it's just completely bizarre.
Right? And it would be out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because you'd imagine people are trying to frame him for writing this letter and destroying the duel arena and whatnot. And if somebody was accusing a god of doing that, don't you think he'd be at least a little bit worked up about that?
Enough to drop a Star Trek reference on us.
Yeah. So I just wanted to throw that in there. But the idea behind this is that in addition to the letter being fake, he has a feeling that somebody with this is trying to frame Trindine.
Mm. It's interesting. We get another little hint that I've just noticed now. Light voice said, no, she would not be so clumsy. It's like, surprising how well Light voice seems to know Trindine.
Yeah. And this, of course, all goes back to when we first revealed Trindine. Trindine thought we were obviously someone else. Mm. And she had the experience of working deeply with these shadows. So I'd assume that she might have at least some sort of inkling of what would be going on here. But remember, we've had the ramification, I believe it was from Lore Q&A, that not everybody would have light and shadow voices. That's just what we have in our character's head. I think what they said is for other people, it could be blue and green voices, just as an example of what was
that was the case with Relomia.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So following from this,
there is post-quest dialogue for the Relomia quests where she just casually drops that she has her own Sliske masks and can hear yours.
Yeah, final little bit of hidden dialogue for the Once Upon a Time 20th anniversary quest. But following from this...
Interesting.
I headed into the Sentistan Cathedral and talked to all the various gods about what was happening at the duel arena. Did you guys talk to the gods before you went on the hunt for Trindine here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. And what was your general sentiments of what they had to say?
Theron kind of sucks.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
It feels just about everyone in Clan Quest, minus a bare few, went extremely Seren sus.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Oddly, I found Armadillo and Ceridomin the most genuine.
Armadillo is just a genuine kind of guy.
Armadillo is always in a panic.
He's a sad bird.
Well, wouldn't you be if you were so concerned about your flock and the aviancies, given the history there?
He's got to depower these eggs.
Everyone else has the same kind of issues.
But he's a lot more panicked about it. Okay. What about Zamorak? Oddly for me, he didn't stand out much here in the initial conversation.
It's like...
it's not me.
It feels like you just expect Zamorak to be an edgelord.
Which I think is a total misconception of what the character is, and that's just years. But, you know, he says the accusation always falls on me for this, and with that, Shadow Voice says, his words, not ours, and he called the entire arena being sunk impressive, and he says he knows nothing about it. And he says, if I intended to harm Ikhlarin, he would be in pieces scattered between here and 4 and 3. You know his family's history with mine. This is some petty quarrel by comparison. And the Light and Shadow Voices say that this is all posturing, which is, I think, our first hint as to what's inevitably going to happen here. But the order I went in terms of the discussion was Ceridomin, Armadillo, Zamorak, and then Saren. But when I got to Saren, I got those really, really creepy vibes that we had been anticipating in all the various god dialogue that would come up with this from when talking to her.
It's interesting. Zamorak seems to deflect. He goes to Ikhlarin as opposed to the Eye of Het. But he technically tells no lies, but Saren, she appears to be lying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Always.
And maybe it's just the way that we've seen her through the Desperate Times and Desperate Measures and all the various Elder God Wars dialogue with this. But that's the sense that I got. But I think we should turn to Trindine now. Unless you guys have anything else to say about Saren. At this time.
All good.
Aaron kinda sus.
Alright. So, the idea behind here is to just follow Trindine, and every time you approach her for the first 3 times, she disappears, and the shadow...
Why the hell did she do that?
She just wants to play a little game. She can't possibly have a straightforward conversation without at least throwing a bit of fun into the mix.
That was so irritating.
There were a lot of players who got semi-stuck on one of the fronts.
What?
Yeah, the last one when she was hiding in the corner or whatever.
I found that easiest. I waded through all the yellow dots and then just went to the bank and said, oh, here she is. Okay, cool.
I initially found the one on the note on front the hardest to find.
Yeah, I remember a friend of mine saying she expected her to be on the front itself rather than the outskirts of the cathedral.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it was that one where she's like hidden in a corner. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
No. No, no, it wasn't. The Krosis front one was, of course, interesting because I was just near the end of the bridge, so that was relatively
simple. She can be in the parts because there's no mobs to attack you.
Yeah, and I was wondering with this if they were going to send people down these fronts without the shard for combat stuff, but I don't think you encountered any combat if you just... went after Trindane, though. I mean, you would have already
I ran past it all.
Yeah, you would have already had to do that with the glaciers and whatnot. So not too much of a big deal with that. Now, following from this, you get to Trindane, and this is actually a really interesting discussion with her.
For all she's fun and tricksy, this is a relatively straightforward conversation, at least it seems so.
Yeah. What I found interesting about this is she made a comment on our own shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular about how when we rescued her from Karadat, she mistook us for someone else, for a true master of shadow. And
rude.
In this conversation with her, did you tell her about how you got this, or did you just keep smiling and not say anything?
You do not have the option to say.
Okay. Where am I thinking? Because I feel like there was an option in this quest to say about your shadow at some point.
No, I don't. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh.
Shane, did you get a different quest to the rest of us?
No. Yeah. No, okay. Right. What I was thinking there is I was hoping that, and I remember looking back on this now, when I was playing through this, I was hoping that there would be an answer to tell her what we knew about why
we made it
up. Our own shadow. Yeah.
There is.
I was hoping we'd have that option, but we didn't.
In Sliske's endgame, there is an option to tell. I think it's Eklaren. There's someone who's worried about you at the end of the quest, and you're casually hearing Sliske laughing every two chat boxes. And you can select the option to say, but you get taken through some text that says, no, you decide not to tell him. Everything's okay. A pleasant lie is better than an unpleasant truth.
So far then, that's one big secret that only the character knows about then.
Yeah, you might not even be able to say it.
Okay, fair enough. Or no, right, it was the shadow voices. Guthix gave us something. He made us like this, light and shadow, and entwined. And
that was a good
bit of
dialogue.
That's what that was that I was thinking about. The light and shadow voices were rattling it off in our head, but then Trindine says, oh, I guess this must be a personal story.
I love the use of the two chat heads at the end, light and shadow talking at once.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that they're going to have an ever-increasing role in terms of how this thing ends up. But after that, we wind up back in the cathedral, and we have the discussion here between the gods as Anadra about what was going on with the duel arena. Who did you all accuse?
Saren.
Saren.
Saren. Okay. And I'm going to ask Tanis, since you've been relatively quiet on this, and I don't think you've done the mini quest yet. Who, based on what you've heard here, who would you accuse of wrecking the duel arena?
Well, I feel like Saren's misdirection just from listening to everybody. I don't know. It just feels too obvious.
She's still sus, but
yeah, but it just, I don't know. That doesn't.
All right.
Yeah.
I wonder if they have telemetry on this about what percentage of players accused who.
I want to see it.
I would like to see that as well.
I did see Modstrike doing an informal little reactions poll in the RuneScape Discord.
And it was heavily Saren related, right?
Heavily Saren. Okay.
Yeah. And I know that's the way Clan Quest went as well.
Mm-hmm.
As a whole. I don't know who would accuse Armadil.
Well, he was going to be my second choice, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, I think there was something the light and shadow voices were saying that made me think, actually, maybe he is worth considering.
Was it the little bit of aviancy at the beginning?
Not that. That was even more clearly a bit of attempted misdirection, even more clearly than the badly written notes. Okay, let's see.
I just didn't think that'd be within his character.
Fair enough. But also, bird's gotta fly, you know?
His character it would be in, though, wouldn't it be Samurak? I mean,
Yeah, fair enough.
We are well aware of him pulling heist in the past, and he's mm-hmm. the kind to, like, not care about consequences and just get the job done.
Okay, Armadale was saying he's less pleased about the Eye of Het surviving, and he doesn't like the idea of relying right. on some unknown power to get us out of this. I think that was what had me suspicious, going, maybe yeah, he'd rather not.
Destroyed it.
And that's kind of, you know, not a reason to destroy it, but it is a reason for suspicion, of course, right?
Yeah.
And you can see me. You can see me deliberating here, just moving my mouse over the list here. And I initially say, Saren, you did this. And the interesting bit about this is that Armadale and Sarah Doman actually go along with you. And once again, Zamorak is quiet.
It seems like that's the case with all of these, interestingly. Yeah.
But
going through the wiki transcript.
But. Your conversation gets rudely interrupted. General Khazard appears and says, I have the eye, father. That wretched dog had no idea what hit him. Next time, do not fail me on your first attempt, Zamorak says.
Oh, shit.
If Panis is smarter than all of us.
Oh, shit!
How does that make you feel that you guessed it?
Oh, pretty good. Oh, that's great.
Congratulations.
But don't worry, Saren's still in the wrong here.
Woohoo!
And everybody's making the case that we need the eye more than Khazard and Zamorak.
No.
And Zamorak says, has she already blinkered you to the tune of something like what happened with Zaros? And she says, she would keep us here for eternity, all of us, not just us gods, everybody who came here. What a sorry fate to live and die again over and over. Are you effectively prepared to do this, he says.
He's not wrong, is he?
No.
Yeah, because this really was all just a big, long delaying tactic. Just Saren stalling forever and ever, and in this case, literally forever. But how long could that potentially be? There is...
For it to maybe hold.
Yeah, because you are not beating the Elder Gods back. They have eternal forces. They can literally create new monsters from the ground to go up against you. There is no winning this. There is only just stalling because Saren can't bear to crack some eggs.
We said this last week, and we said this when Ichlorin first appeared. Any form of bringing people back is just going to be, in effect, prolonging this until something else happens. So I don't think we imagine the something else happening this soon.
Yep. It's just Saren's plan is out of the window. Now we have to think of something different. We can't just use this as a crutch.
Oh, and
saying it's all right for now.
Oh, and by the way, after this dialogue, Khazard and Zamorak are gone. So there's just the three of them now working on the eggs. So
and they can't hold back themselves.
Yep. So there's that. How does that make everyone feel?
Zamorak did nothing wrong.
Okay. Quest caping, how does this make you feel?
So honestly, I cannot disagree with him at all. It's like the real problem is that he did this with no warning, I guess. He just gets right out of there, does not give us any advance notice, does not say, hey, this can't be forever and I won't let this be forever. You have X days to come up with a new plan. He's just out immediately and things could be messed up for real tomorrow. Not that the update schedule will allow it, but we have no idea how long we have now. We're just in free fall.
But we're forced to find a solution, aren't we?
It's extremely Zamorakian, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good. I love it.
And see, the interesting part about this is that prior to 2013, Zamorak was always portrayed by the community, at least, as the evil side of things, and Ceridoman as the good side of things.
Chaos and order.
Right, but following from that, with all the gods coming back, they doubled down on what Zamorak really stands for, and it's that whole angle of chaos and order, or order through chaos.
It's not necessarily chaotic evil. It's just chaotic for the sake of bringing something through that.
Now, I have a question about this. And actually, I have two questions, but we'll move through this as we wrap. We'll answer the second one as we wrap up the mini quest. Do you think this has created any Zamorak fans out there?
It certainly made me more of one.
I saw some people saying, actually, Zamorak was extremely immature here.
Really?
Yeah, there were a couple of those in the Clan Quest chat.
Interesting.
I don't know, I think people are more likely to be in Zamorak's favor from what I've seen, but you really could go either way, because it is an extremely blunt and direct and kind of unhelpful way of going about things. Yeah.
He would not have done this if he didn't already have something else to investigate that he felt was viable enough to abandon this, make these enemies, and go. That's where I'm at.
Yeah,
and you think he has something else,
but
hey?
The only... I don't know what Zamorak would have. But there is that whole undone chapter of Zaros disappearing into the monolith. And Tony and whatever else is in there. And Voss and all that other stuff.
Not next. Char.
Yeah, Char.
Yes.
That's right. But that's more Zorosian in nature, right? Could this be a turn of events in which Zamorak... No, I don't...
Zoros doesn't hold any ill will towards him, though.
No, but I think Zamorak still might. Do you think that Zamorak could be going home?
Hold ill will against him for what? Dying?
Well, just...
What did Zoros do to Zamorak?
Well, no, I just have the impression that there's a rift there between the two of them still.
Well,
Zaros doesn't care.
Zaros doesn't care about anyone anymore. Me?
You know that time when you stabbed me?
Right, and I think it hasn't suited him yet in order to kill Zamorak off. Hence why he hasn't done that, or maybe it just doesn't...
Because he already would have.
He would have if it would have made sense to a long time ago. That's exactly
I think
it.
He has plans.
So the question is Zamorak going home?
What does that mean?
To the Zorosian side.
I don't know about...
Maybe for self-preservation, but I think he's too proud for that, really. I don't think he's about to get himself subjugated again.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And with that, after this, you just return to Ikhlorin and talk about what happened, and there is actually a good amount of dialogue with all the different gods after this. I want to focus... Go ahead.
There's also dialogue with every Zamorakian in the Elder God Wars dungeon.
Oh!
Everyone.
Oh, what do they have to say? I didn't talk to them.
There's some interesting ones... There's... Inakra actually has quite a bit to say.
Okay.
Mm. But yeah, so they all have their different takes on what they do now and how much it means to what they're doing in practice. And yeah, so where do we go now, essentially, now that Zamorak has left and we're still here?
Yeah, I can see that. That makes sense. I want to talk about Saren's post-quest dialogue.
Oh, boy. That's it's quite something, isn't it?
Yeah. So in terms of talking about what's next, in particular with Saren, Armadil says that he needs to, he feels like he needs to go warn his people on Abena, and Saradomin accuses him of giving up easily. And he says, yeah, go, none of us will stop you. Armadil says, why do you stay? The three of us don't have the power to stop the eggs from hatching anymore. Why do you keep going? Saradomin says, it's because we have not fallen yet. Today, Gilinar lives, and as long as it does, I'll defend those who call it home. And
you screenshots of these.
Yeah. And conspicuously, throughout this entire section of dialogue between these two, Saren is quiet. Armadil says, Lady Saren, do you have a plan? She's quiet. Yet again. And the most disturbing part of the dialogue, when you ask how much, or that she says, they're so close to hatching. I can feel it. They're so alive. Saradomin says, how much longer do we have? Saren says, not long. The children are coming. Can't you hear them sing?
Here we go.
So I'm more concerned about that, honestly, than what Zamorak did.
Yeah, it's terrifying on its own accord, but also people have made the connection between this and Voss, because it was an ongoing theme in the Centistan dig site that people would go to the bridge and look across the river and hear things like people they used to know.
The children.
Yeah.
Didn't they say there was children singing in the streets that they heard through one of the mysteries, I think?
Ooh.
I think we talked about that on Lore Diggers for Centistan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd need to cross-reference that one, but yeah, it really does feel
and
like...
And these things are going to hatch in that same area.
Yeah.
Where that Voss business happened.
Quite a coincidence that they happen to be right here in a place where you have direct access to the deep, deep shadow realm and this weird, spooky impression of the monolith.
All right. Earth, who are you more worried about at this point? What Zamorak is going to do or what Saren says in post-quest here?
Not going to lie, I'm not sure Zamorak does have anything. I think we should all be worried about Saren. She is far too powerful.
Why does she want to delay it?
She
knows this is stalemate.
Saradomin says it himself, I think. He says, I see this hurts you, Saren, but you need to make a choice, them or us. And Zamorak says she's already made that choice. She would sacrifice it all to save them.
When was this?
Zamorak did nothing wrong.
That is in the immediate post-betrayal dialogue when Khazad's just shown up.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Tanis, which one are you more worried about? It's an interesting thing to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
They all worry me equally.
We've just been blown wide open.
Okay. Your turn to Ikhlorin, and that is quest complete. I don't know that there's anything else we need to talk about here in relation to the actual mini quest. Anything? Any other NPCs that... you guys went to talk to that I might have missed. I only went to the four gods. Actually,
yeah,
I didn't go to Zamorak because he was gone. But, I mean, the other three of them. And Ikhlorin.
I wonder if he's at the place. I can't remember
Zamorak hideout. I know somebody said from Clan Quest said they checked that out and he had no additional dialogue there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at the wiki transcript here. There is dialogue for Azanadra, Zemaregul, Hazeel, Nimora, Avaris, Kuril Tutsaroth, and Inakra.
Huh.
So it's interesting how they've gone really surprisingly beefy on the post-quest dialogue here, when previously the approach seems to have been no post-quest dialogue at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Azanadra, you suggest to him that you can try, that he can try siphoning the eggs. Azanadra says, "I would gladly attempt it, but regrettably, I don't yet have the constitution to take Zamorak's place. Perhaps if we had a few more decades, I could withstand it, but right now, it would destroy me." Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And he says, "I will not let this be the end." Mm-hmm. So there's some sort of plan that he's aware of, yeah, that Saren is aware of, that Zamorak is aware of, that can be acted upon here. And I wonder, are we about to be just taken for a ride here? You know, we are the World Guardian after all, but are we just about to be taken for a ride here by these gods in terms of fixing this problem?
Remember the Blood Warden in City of Sentistan had a phrase for each front, and then the final one was, "They will all betray you."
Sorry, one at a time here. Questcaping, where was this?
So in City of Sentistan, you fight the Blood Warden. It has various dialogue lines, including one that references each front in turn. And then there's one last line of dialogue there that's where he says, "They will all betray you." There's been a lot of theorizing about what that could mean. Huh. And yeah. Doesn't it feel relevant now?
It does, because Zamorak has just betrayed us, or at least...
Has he, though?
Right, and see, that's the thing. If you're on the side of shaking the box to get a better solution, this is the thing to do.
Because, just depends on there being a better solution.
Because, well, no, and, you know, there are people in the world who are notorious for this, for... Everybody has their own view of what is acceptable and what is just, you know, the accepted state of affairs. There are people who can shake the box out there and make things happen seemingly out of nothing. And, you know, one of them, ones I always like to go back to on this, and talking real world now, is always able to do this, was Steve Jobs. In terms of...
He wouldn't have done that if he didn't think there was a better solution and have ideas.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what shaking the box means. So
Zemarak never would have gone there in the first place.
He probably saw this as one of the off ramps to take.
And then once he realized, hey, this isn't working,
it's just a question of the right time and getting one of his generals to do it, in this case, Khazard.
Yeah, he sent Khazard out to do it. He has, scores of other people he can send up to do stuff, too.
You know, I still disagree. I think, like, Zamorak is honestly the kind of person who would just shake things up for the sake of shaking things up, not knowing if there is a better solution yet. And I think there's a lore book in game which has him demonstrating to Moya his philosophy, where he literally burns down a village that's just become stagnant in society, burns it down and lets them come up with whatever. And they don't have anything in place at the time they burn it down. They're forced to come up with something. So I think this is just him forcing us to come up with something, not that he necessarily has anything.
And I strongly disagree with it being called a betrayal, because what did he gain from this?
Fair enough. He says to himself, all he gets is, "I die free."
Yeah.
And with that, he's also able to open up the, in effect, break that loop of what just would have been a continual case of reanimating dead people, first through necromancy and then through the eye of
Hel.
Yeah.
Than just people.
Right, obviously. And
can I bring up?
Yeah, yeah. I just want to say first that I think that this is definitely something that Looking on this, not being a Zamorak fan ever, this is something I can get behind.
Hey.
Go ahead.
So we have the other Zamorakians in the Elder God Wars saying various things. Zamorigo says he can only raise these ragged corpses so many times. If Lord Zamorak has retreated to formulate a plan, he had best reveal it soon. Haziel says, this has changed the situation somewhat. Begone, I must think on what this means. Nimora and Avaris are very committed to keeping on hunting in spite of Zamorak's absence.
Right.
Krill Tsutsarov says, no matter, he knows he can leave this fight to his most trusted warriors. And, and then gets extremely battle-worthy type. Die, Nodon, the Lord of Chaos demands your slaughter. So that's Krill for ya. And Inakra
has... He's not abandoning.
No, not when Krill is about.
Exactly.
And Inakra has quite some interesting dialogue. You ask her, why don't you leave like Zamorak? And Akra says, well, silly me, why didn't I think of that? You don't just walk away from a fight with an Archglace or a World Guardian. If we are to retreat without being summarily crushed, it must be carefully coordinated. Besides, some of us still live here. Player says, you want to save Gilinor? And Akra says, this world is rife with folly, weakness, and wasted potential. But it is not without its charms. I will not let it die, not while I have any other choice. So okay. Yeah, she had some rather substantial dialogue there. It's interesting to see a Margaret really just sort of considering Gilinor home. To an extent.
Okay, so that's the alternate frame for what Zamorak is up to. I have a feeling that if we had an idea about what the alternate path would be, we would feel a lot more comfortable with that. But, Tanis, any questions before we wrap up the discussion on the quest here?
No, not really. I'm starting to question how much longer this is going to go.
Because
feels like it's starting to drag on.
Right, because the next step is obviously that the eggs hatch, right? I think we all agree with that.
Well, maybe.
Maybe. Who knows? But we do have questions about
find
that.
Find out what my boy has up his sleeve.
Earth, anything else before we move on to patch notes?
Zamorak did nothing wrong.
Okie dokie. I should also mention that you get with this the Eye of Het relic that unlocks the Blessing of Het relic power that buffs any food eaten when it is active by 10%, consuming food and potions by 10%. So, on to patch notes we go, and I need to talk about some of these because we have a discussion that we started last week, and I think we should finish this week. And this wasn't in the patch note, but what they have done is that with the Oasis Restoration event entering its final week, there's new tasks, and each one that you complete, of course, unlocks community progress. And as of update day on Monday, they boosted progression rates so that, quote, we can make that final charge towards the finish line.
Yeah, Raven was talking about this on the stream for this, saying that he just misestimated the amount of engagement.
Yeah.
But I also saw people talking about how it's the Tablet of Het that boosts Elder God Wars dungeon drop rates, right?
Yeah.
People were talking about how if given the option between that and the Oasis event, people will
choose
optimize
the
their time
and
go for that money.
Obviously. I concur with that. I think it makes sense. And Tanis, did you put any time in at the Oasis this week?
Yeah, it's almost like It's almost like I'm psychic.
Uh-huh.
Because I distinctly remember saying last week that they were going to do this.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, the changes to the Oasis this week, what a triumph of capitalism. You know, it goes against my communistic ways, but yeah, I like having my own gator doing my own thing. And
yeah.
And it also lets you.
Selfish.
Yeah, I know. Very much. But at least you. At least now you can kind of gauge how fast it or slow it actually is.
Yeah. And I'll get into that in just a minute. I just want to update everybody on the progress since we landed on Monday.
I'm already here. You could have just asked.
And
God.
Oh, you are.
Yeah. We're 61.2.
Thank you. I just opened the client to find that. Thank you. I will close it now promptly, and we'll move on to patch notes. I didn't know
Pay
you were standing right there.
To the show, Shane. Come
I
on.
I didn't know. All right. Let's go on to patch notes. So crocodiles will no longer get stuck during a scarab catch if another player catches one first. Okay. So this actually allowed for a little bit of tick trickery to happen last week, to the point where people were in effect able to get double catches with this if the person was trying to catch the same scarab as them, to the point where you could in effect double your progress that was made on this. And this is why a lot of people who are going for the comp cape requirement on this were so adamant on doing it last week, is because they were able to get double progress if they were working with a partner. I saw this demoed to me this past weekend, and it, lo and behold, worked for that. So that's what this first patch note meant.
Imagine the coordination you need for that.
Yeah.
Almost doesn't, but like, I don't get this patch note with, there's a later patch note that seems like it would make this a non-issue. But
okay. Well, we'll move through them. Dispersing gas clouds on flower bushes no longer allow the players to infinitely gain the maximum XP. I assume that was the case if you spam clicked it, so that's interesting. Fixed an issue during Eye of Het 1 where Ichlerin was not appearing if the player teleported out of the instance before entering the tomb. And during the instance in Eye of Het 1, the rope ladder and fallen palm tree can no longer be used. This will prevent players from leaving the instance by accident. Also, a typo has been fixed on the rewards interface where Strength of Het has been replaced with Might of Het.
Yeah, so I think the rewards interface was saying new Strength of Het relic power. Yeah. Well, not relic power, but option on the aura, and people were saying, hey, the Desert Pantheon has always had a Strength of Het, but this clarifies that it is in fact Might of Het, which is better in some way, which we will see.
Yeah, and this is I'm betting you now get this. I think it's somewhere in Menaphos, the Shifting Tombs, I think, where you get this if you didn't have it for 2016-17 from your club. Mm-hmm. So just keep that in mind as we start unlocking that. Catching scarabs with crocodiles is now not shared with players. And this is the part of the patch notes that I really wanted to talk about, because this actually makes this, I feel, a nice training method.
It makes it better.
Better.
And if you're not, if you're not competing, then see, this is the one I was talking about. Like, doesn't that make the earlier patch note like a non?
Well, no, because what I think that they were just treated as two separate things on that initially. Hmm. But if they did the first one, then this one should definitely be the case. The first one, it's all instanced, so
it depends on whether they want it to remain competitive or just become personalized.
All right. Yeah, I can see that. And I think I'm at about 2,200 caught so far.
All right.
On the road. Over time, I will push towards the full 5,000 on this. But one thing that I do want to say with this, and it's the irises and hollyhocks that I've been doing in terms of the flowers to catch the, what were they called? Swift. And I forget the name of the other scarab, but in effect, what I've been doing with this is I've been making powders of item protection and powders of burials with this. And last I looked, the powders of item protection protects an extra item. We're still selling for 300k each, and each one takes 15 to make. So it's very possible with this that, and, you know, in terms of just general money making, in terms of the amount of money that we're talking about here, it's not going to be, you know, rivaling, say, PVM or water runecrafting as it is today, but these things aren't cheap.
You give it valuable rewards, yeah, and it's not cheap.
Yeah. Swift and speed.
That you can use
is what the hollyhocks and irises give, and I've been just focusing on those two, and it's just been a nice supplemental source of cash with this. And with so many people doing this, I can imagine that after a few weeks these powders are actually going to settle at a nice place, specifically the powder of burials and the powder of item protection,
especially now that this is no longer a new update.
Yeah. And the people who are doing it for comp are going to be having moved on and whatnot. So I think this is probably going to wind up being, outside of big game hunter, our hunter money-making method.
Nice little sleeper benefit from this update.
Yeah, it'll take a while for us to see how everything equalizes, but I definitely think that's the path that we're on. And the crocodiles not being instanced and the scarabs not being instanced in the first week was in just a minor stumbling block for this. But overall, I think we're in a far better position now than we were last week. And I feel good about it. So I am pleased. Also, crocodiles will no longer get stuck behind a wall when dropping loot. Which,
that's good.
You don't want that to happen when you're when you're handling your croc. Prayer powders will now correctly disappear from the buff bar when depleted. What?
I didn't say anything.
Okay. What's up, Questscaping?
Nothing.
Okay, fair enough. Failing the last obstacle on the Het's agility course was providing the player with a debuff, which was taken forwards into their next lap, and this was the intended behavior, but after feedback, this will no longer happen. All right.
That's a weird kind of behavior.
Yeah.
I think it's been ages since an agility course was failable, it feels like. Is the Anachronia course failable?
I don't think. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it is, but it doesn't really hurt you particularly
much.
No,
it just takes a few life points off, and I mean, even at 99, I still wear my agility cape if I'm doing the Anachronia course just to prevent that failure.
And then you just do the obstacle all over again. You don't get a whole debuff for the next lap.
Right. So it's a bit of a weird mechanic, and I mean, at this point, we had this discussion last week about where agility sits in the whole grand scheme of things in the game, so. But that's a topic for another day, of course. Planks stored in the construction plank box can now be used to make flower hotspots. A tool leprechaun has been added next to the new cactus patch in Het's Oasis, which one thing I forgot to mention last week on the show is that this oasis morphs so nicely into the Karadat dig site in terms of the banking and whatnot that's available there, and just how you move so seamlessly from Mage Training Arena to Oasis, then to Karadat.
It's like we're revamping the whole area bit by bit.
Yeah, and it just flows so nice. I wanted to mention that last week, but I didn't get around to it.
Did you mention the crocodile farmer there is there?
Yes.
That was a favorite of mine.
Yeah. The powder of item protection will now correctly protect an extra item on death when using protect item. That wasn't working the previous week.
Oh, dear.
Players were failing obstacles with the sure-footed aura and agility skill cape boosts active, and this has now been fixed, and these boosts will prevent you from failing. Toad Flax incense sticks now give you a chance to save yourself from failing an obstacle. The Cramulet can now be interacted with when equipped, which was a fun topic of discourse last week on the podcast. Right, Earth?
Sorry, say that again?
Our discussion about the Cramulet last week, how you didn't even know that that the Crocs had dialogue.
Yeah.
Oh, Earth.
Sorry, I don't think. Crocodile. Yeah, let me talk to them.
You don't have a chat with every crocodile you see?
No, in fact, I would say I actively avoid them.
Steve Irwin is disappointed.
They're the perfect killer.
Well, let's just remember that it wasn't the croc that got him.
Mm-hmm. Damn rays.
Yeah. A few mounds of sand at the Caridad dig site that were floating above the ground have been fixed, and fixed an issue that allowed the players to gather multiple Hekkas and Het masks from inside the Statue of Het. And there's our patch notes for the week. I was expecting maybe some from other areas of the game, but I can see that, you know, focusing on Het's Oasis the week after releases is good to get some of these early things out. One thing I'm not sure if was slipstreamed in with this one yet, or if this is still forthcoming. I know there was discussion about making the master farming cape work for automatically fertilizing the flower patches, but since that wasn't mentioned here, I'm going to assume that that is not in. So I'll be waiting for that one. But
that would be nice.
It really would.
It'd be a nice addition.
It really would. So I'm just going to say, if you want to go farm those scarabs and you have all the levels, go for the hollyhocks and irises, and you'll be enjoying a nice payday at the end of it all. So
I'm just going to quickly do some of that before this podcast goes out and everyone knows and the prices crash.
No, that's already happened thanks to YouTubers and Reddit.
Ah.
Not compared to where they were. The ones I cited earlier were around 600-700k a pop earlier in the week.
Nice.
So then they started to go down. But Tanis, do you feel any better about the Oasis this week than last week? Because I know we had a little roundabout discussion on that.
It's in better shape. It's better. The fixes were desperately needed. So
yeah. It also looks beautiful this week too. For anybody who hasn't gone there, it's got a different look than it did last week. Last week was still quite a bit dusty, but now we actually have the final look on what it looks like. So if you haven't been to the Oasis yet this week, definitely go give it a look. So, looks wonderful, as with most of the environments they do these days in RS. Just I feel like they've been on this path with all the Centistan and all the various fronts and whatnot of just nailing the environment art on all these.
Absolutely.
I thought it stood out.
Yeah. Really good. Really good.
I love how it's evolved out of the jewel arena.
Yeah, and you know, the fun part is, if you still look into some of the pools of the water, you can actually see where you would do the dueling if you had the obstacles up. So that was good. That was good. I like that touch. Also new palm trees as well. Just imagine what Karamja could look like with all these.
What a concept.
And actually the week before this, and we didn't mention it last week, but all the trees last week had a bark texture update. I asked if we should put this on the show, but I worried if I'd be barking up the wrong tree.
How dare you?
I think on that note, we should move on to Patreon and then our questions.
Let's move swiftly onwards, yes.
You better move on. Punch you in the mouth if you were next to me and said that.
Wow.
Make like a tree and leave.
Oh, dear.
You got two hands, right, Earth?
Uh-huh. Use both of them.
All right, this week for Patreon, I would like to thank, in particular, these fine people for making this episode possible: Amos Reed, Andrew C, Bryflex, a new arrival, Christian S, Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plunks, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Elomady, Free Milk, Jacob R., Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Kesky Plays, Nate the Great, Nick G., Pernasius, Renha, Ricky A., Samuel F.L., Scott D.S., Seth W., Singer, Stubby, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us. And, of course, we are very, very close to that 200 mark where we will be unveiling a special Patreon gift for all subscribers. We might have just a little teaser on that coming later this month or in early February. So definitely keep an eye out on the Patreon feed for that. But in addition to that, we have an entire back catalog of 42 monthly bits right now. Number 42 should be up there by the time you guys are hearing this. We tiered all the dailies in Dailyscape today. And that's our most recent monthly bit as a tier listing of all the dailies in Dailyscape. It was myself, Utanis, Sirion, and Thaxi. We spent a good hour and 10 minutes or so talking about this, and I think it turned out really well.
Yep.
You learned about some dailies that you should be doing. I learned about some, and I think we all picked something up, and that's a hallmark of a good monthly bit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to tease the listeners? Which one surprised you most?
Just about everyone that Thaxi brought up. Some niche ass content.
I have no idea how Thaxi does it. Just picks up on the something no one has ever heard of before, and it's the most incredible thing ever.
Yeah, the most incredible still. I won't spoil where we classified it, but the food hamper, I was like, huh? What is that?
Huh?
Yep. That's what we were talking about in terms of Dailyscape tiering. But of course, we also, you get that for as little as a dollar a month. That and 41 other ones of that caliber. That's some people would charge you $5 per episode on that. We don't. We make it a dollar per month for anybody who wants access to that. But we do also have two other tiers, the VIP tier for $3 a month, where you'll get a special rank on Discord and access to stereo versions of the podcast. And we have a $5 tier as well, where you get a shout out each and every week and exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year, which being two episodes in, you're going to be waiting for a while to hear clips if you don't get that. So there's plenty of good options for that. But, you know, should we reach that ultimate end goal of 500, the Hot Ones challenge, which will be very fun for you and myself and whoever else manages to show up for that one, won't it, Tanis?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be fun at all.
No.
But we'll do it. We'll do it for the listeners.
That's right. And that's what Patreon is all about. The listeners making this show possible and us working very closely with them to provide a new level of content that they can't get anywhere else. So thank you, everybody, for making this possible. Check us out at patreon.com/rsvnb. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Alrighty, first question from Alaska. How exactly do you guys think Kazard managed to start an earthquake? And this is a serious and non-serious question at the same time.
Being a dumb shit?
A tantrum.
I honestly have no idea on this. I mean, is there some weird power he might have?
Yeah, being a dumb shit.
His power is always Shadow Realm and dumb shit. Okay. Yeah, he's just the baby of the Majra. It is genuinely surprising that he can actually do this. But I think they were saying in the quest that the power had to be divine. It had to be some god's doing. And haven't we recently found out, and by recently I mean 2016, recently in RuneScape lore terms, found out that Kazard is Zemarak's son.
Yeah.
And you kind of got to wonder that maybe he inherited just a bit more than the dashing good looks.
Or maybe Zemarak gave him a little bit of power somehow.
Hmm. I mean, was this before or after godhood, though?
I think think it had to be after the way it was planned out, because Khazad's mum died in the Third Age not long after having him. So Third Age, that's post-ascension. It's got to be.
Fascinating. And yet we still kicked his ass at like level 40.
Right. And I was just going to say that this guy's been in game since 2002.
So maybe Zemarek did finally give down the inheritance.
Yeah, maybe he didn't have it that whole time.
Fight Arena Quest. I remember doing that. That was an interesting one. That was one of, back in the day, you're right, doing this at a very low combat level, and you're kind of wondering what would happen going into that. But I'm on board with the slight power from Zemarek angle on that. So. Tanis, Earth, any other ideas? Or are we good with that?
I'm good with that.
I mean, I'm sure he just activated a trap or something.
All right. Number two, we got a more explicit answer than usual on what the light and shadow voices are, considering what was mentioned in the restricted engram from Asinandra's quest. To what extent do you think Guthix planned this? You know,
that's the million-dollar question.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I was actually thinking of this when we were talking about the light and shadow earlier, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that he probably foresaw this as one of the paths things would go with Sliske's little game just being a convenient distraction.
He basically put he gave Sliske the World Guardian's name and just sort of let Sliske do the rest from the sound of the engram.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Forced us together, so light and shadow say.
Yeah, and I think the general implication from all that is that we wouldn't have been able to do and be able to be going through what we're doing right now if not for our first confrontation we had with Sliske there. At least that's the way I interpret it on this. So I think that, do you think it was planned? Because planned is in quotation marks, or do you think this is just one potential path he saw things going? Or do you think he saw this exact path?
I do think I have, because I've been talking about this on the monthly bits, as aforementioned. We did, in fact, talk about where we think the Elder God Wars arc will end.
Right.
And I do think the World Guardian being part light and part shadow is inherent to the way this will end up, because that is something the Elder Gods cannot and will never have, and that is our bargaining chip over them.
So, when it says we got a more explicit answer than usual on what the light and shadow voices are, what does that mean?
Alaska? Any help?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't understand exactly what that's saying.
Well, I think this goes back to the, in particular, the Once Upon a Time discussion that we had about these light and shadow voices, how that they're not there for everybody and they're not the same for everyone. And that these ones were built specifically for us based on what our path has been and what our path will be.
Anyone can have a Sliske, but we have this specific Sliske, maybe because of Guthix.
Yes, that's the way I'd see that, and I think that that's what the exact explicit answer is from that Once Upon a Time post quest dialogue. I think that's what she's mentioning with this.
Oh, it's implanted in us.
Yeah, and Guthix did that. And Sliske did that. And you couldn't have had our final product without both of them.
So, what if it's not just Sliske then?
What?
Well, Sliske stabbed Zaros, right?
No.
Or Guthix, I mean.
No. He didn't even
transfer
it.
Well,
he didn't stab. He sort of zapped.
No, power was transferred from Guthix to Sliske.
So are you saying
from Sliske to us?
Are you saying we might have a Guthix in here as well?
Maybe he's the light voice.
Oh God!
There's too much sass.
To die
for that.
Yet.
There's too much sass for that.
Well, I mean, it's mixed, right?
Or maybe, like, maybe it could be kind of like a gothic space.
If he really planned all of this, then he would have had to have done something like that. Make sure everything didn't,
like,
you know.
Keeping an eye out on the plan?
Keeping an eye on it and making sure everything actually goes to plan. Interesting.
So it could, in effect, be Gothix's essence paired with Sliske's personality for the light voice. Is what you're getting
I think
getting
the
at.
Shadow voice is definitely Sliske.
Yeah, we know that much.
But I could see the light voice just being balanced.
Because we're one of the very few that can traverse those deepest levels of the Shadow Realm right now, right? Do we know who else can do that yet?
Yugi? Finn, do you get that joke?
No, I was just laughing for the hell of it, because my question wasn't answered.
Duel!
Oh my God.
But who in our current crop of characters would be able to traverse deep into the Shadow Realm like that?
Zaros,
sure. But he's not a factor. Trending.
What do you mean he's not a factor?
He's been gone since Battle of the Monolith.
Has he? Or has he just been in the Shadow Realm?
If he was in the Shadow Realm, there would have been a reason for us to know.
Erebus kind of is.
Disappeared
right?
Before. There's precedent for this.
Right. Erebus is the deepest lair of the Shadow Realm. We do know that much. But I think if he was able to get back, he would have. Or has he just, like we said on the episode, the monthly bit about where this ends, or has he just given up and trying to go elsewhere? Because
I think
remember,
he has given up on serious.
Because remember, he has Maw's core with him still.
But now you mentioned the hook from the crop of characters can traverse the deep Shadow Realm. Khazad can. Khazad is... I'm actually starting to agree with you, Earth. I think Zamorak might be using his dumb shit little boy to go traverse the Shadow Realm for him.
Mm-hmm. Pretty smart!
Unlike Khazad!
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes you don't need a precision weapon. You need a sledgehammer. You gotta get through a wall, you get a sledgehammer. You don't get a knife.
A level 40 sledgehammer.
Exactly.
Oh, you know, I think we could have a whole monthly bit on this question number two here, because I feel like there's, if we got that whole team together again and bring Earth on that, we could have a full discussion on that. Because I feel like we're just beginning to scratch the surface with this. So just to answer this, planned? Yes?
Yes.
God's plan.
Or one of the paths. Okay,
I
so
think,
you say planned.
Yeah.
Tanis, planned or just a path?
Path.
All right, fair enough. And for question three, do you think the next update related to Elder God Wars will be its finale quest, or do you still expect more remains in between? And the interesting part about this, we had a live stream in November after the Zuck Front came out. They said that we were about 2/3 the way through.
Yeah, I think my instinct here is not one more thing, but two more things.
Yeah.
That feels about right to me.
And the question is, how long are they going to keep us waiting now? Next week? The week after?
Four years.
No!
How long have I been waiting on Monkey Madness 2? Arposandra?
No, you could go play old school if you want that.
I was going to say, there's a solution for that.
Not
but
for
it's
Arposandra, though.
True. True. I could also mention the quest that shall not be named.
Oh, God.
What?
Don't do that. You'll delay it another month.
What?
Rite
oh
of
God,
passage.
I can't say it. No!
Rite of passage, no! The Armadale Avian Sequest.
You said it twice, you monster.
Ooh.
There's been this whole community push to get Rite of Passage out, which was talked about at One Rune Fest, which was supposed to be a quest where we go to Abanoth, finally, the Avian Sea homeworld.
I think it was meant to be Raven's next project after missing presumed death or something.
But it never happened.
2013.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Alaska. The next one
is important as what I want.
Oh, boy.
I'm the main character.
I'm
your
captain,
whole
man.
Planet.
I'm the captain.
That's man. Right.
All right. Next one from Brieflex. So why can't the eggs be moved to another planet? Maybe this is a dumb question. No, there are no dumb questions. Thank you for asking that.
Yeah. So I think moving them to another planet does kind of help, but also delays the problem.
Yeah.
Because what happens, what we're fearing here, what we're trying to prevent, is the moment when the Elder Gods touch their eggs and it all hatches and they just devour the anima of the entire planet they're on. Which, if they're on another planet, cool, fine. It won't be Gillinor, it won't be the perfect planet with the perfect anima, but maybe that'll work for them anyway. But
at the end of it, all the universe will be destroyed.
Yeah, because that still is the long-term thing,
yeah.
Them going through the universe and destroying everything and remaking it.
Right.
Because that is more long-term than the moment of hatching, but it is still just another thing to avoid.
The
it's
way
more stalling.
The way it works is the eggs hatch on what is viewed as the perfect world, which in this case it was Gillinor. Last time was Frenisque, which we've been to before in Azanaj's quest and previous quests before that. And we see what Frenisque is like now, but I'm a little bit foggy on this. What was the reason after they hatched on Frenisque from last time that the entire universe wasn't destroyed?
Well, the entire universe was destroyed, just the universe that Frenisque was in. And
okay.
They
so in effect,
we're
going to a different universe with the world.
Yeah.
There. Okay, got it. Got it.
Well,
okay.
the remnants of a different universe, essentially.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and the start of the new one. But yeah, so it is possible that we could just wait for them to remake for the universe. The Dragonkin managed to escape the last one, but it's still not really the ideal solution, is it?
No, because
they were also tasked to do some things. They were probably saved.
Yeah.
So. Well, think the Dragonkin is a. Think they're certainly an exception.
Yeah, and we know what happened and how that created internal strife within the ones who just slept off the curse, right?
It's not the ideal outcome.
No, it's not. So, in effect, moving them to another planet would delay the inevitable, but eventually the universe would be destroyed and it will look like Frenisque regardless. So it is something that needs to be dealt with. And, you know, when you step out of the universe, it's really a convenient plot device because it means that the world we're on is in effect the perfect world, and that's a better way to base the story out of then. So, all right. I believe that wraps our questions up for this week, and we can move on to picks of the week. Tanis?
All right. I got a movie. And Shane, I know this is your favorite actor, but believe it or not,
uh-huh.
I did not even know this person was the lead character until my wife told me. I was like, nah. Because there were several times that during this movie, I stopped the movie because I'm like, I can't watch. This is so real life. Oh my God. But my pick of the week is called Don't Look Up. And if you want a synopsis of what America is like, watch Don't Look Up. It's so good.
It's got the it's got the qualifier title of being a comedy slash disaster film.
It's complete. Well, it's satire, okay. But this is stinging, just beautiful satire at its best. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to give too much away, but it has to do with a comet. But that comet, you could replace it with many things, and it wouldn't change the movie at all. Highly recommend it. You got to check it out.
That's exactly the kind of show I expect Leonardo DiCaprio to be part of.
Well, there you go. Jennifer Lawrence is she looks good. She's like an astronomer, but she's kind of like
nerd bait.
There you go. She got a nose ring. Like, she kind of looks hot. Like,
yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah, I'm not usually, you know, that doesn't usually do it, but she pulls it off pretty well.
All right. So that's Don't Look Up, available on Netflix. 2 hours and 20 minutes. Rare to see movies that long in this day and age.
Well, you know.
It's been like over 3 hours for a bunch lately.
Yeah, those are good. I like long movies if I know what I'm getting into. So, Earth, do you have a pick of the week? Or, sorry, finish tennis.
Sports, tennis, sorry, were you done?
Oh, I was...
Don't want Shane
tell.
To cut you off.
I was going to tell Shane it's worth it to see how they satirize Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg. It's worth it just for that. Oh. Just for that.
All right. Fair enough.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Earth, go ahead.
My pick of the week is Forza Horizon 5.
Another pick of the week we're doing again, but go for it.
Oh, who did it?
Tannis did, but he'll talk about
it. Good. Well, it's so good, it should be twice.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I will just warn you all, when you are designing decals to go on your vehicles, you're not allowed to have any fun with it. I put... So a white Ford Bronco is associated with one person and one person only, and that is O.J. Simpson in his infamous car chase. So obviously I put free O.J. on the side of one. I got a week-long ban. Like,
just don't understand who that offends.
I don't understand it. Like, I still think it got picked up by an automated filter for like free candy or something.
You're right. Yeah, because
the ban I got was for child endangerment.
Oh,
and you know what? I don't think that fits. But that aside, it is a very fun game. Just don't upload anything.
Oh, that's
absolutely
amazing.
I love that game. So
no,
I'm
it
right
is a lot
you.
Of fun. It has right a great soundtrack.
One could even say probably that the soundtrack slaps, I believe people are saying.
And don't.
Don't run it, Shane.
You made one good joke with that. Just let it stay there.
All right. But yeah, Tannis loves the game, primarily from an accessibility angle. And, you know, Microsoft always does a wonderful job on these. And this is why I said also earlier, before I began here, I'm just 100% on board with Microsoft's vision of everything that they do. So, Questscaping. I dare to ask what this is. It is a YouTube video. I see that much. I will let you tell the listeners what it is.
I heard Shane read out the title of it in absolute incredulity earlier. This is a YouTube video titled, I Gave Clippy AI and He Wanted to Die. So, it is an accurate summary of the video. It is about this one he works in the games industry, and he does these absolutely balmy side projects every now and again. And this time it was creating an AI Clippy, bringing back Clippy with the power of GPT-3. And it is an absolute roller coaster of a video, from the struggle to get it to work in the first place to all the silly nonsense they did with Clippy once they had the old Paperclip himself up and running, just casually playing a bit of D&D with Clippy. And then it gets really rather strangely existential about the nature of AI and what this really means and what they've done. You wouldn't expect that from a video about bringing back an old Microsoft Paperclip mascot, but that sure is the way it goes. And I felt emotions watching this, bizarrely enough. So it's got all your bases covered in the most strange of ways.
All right. All right. I am,
you're in for a ride.
I am remembering last time Microsoft actually made their Taybot AI on Twitter, and that was a disaster. So this is, I'm actually going to watch this and see how this turned out.
Became a neo-Nazi, for those of you unaware. Like, actually, it...
Yeah, instantly.
I mean, it was, like, within a day, right?
Yeah. Welcome to the internet.
Slight spoiler, but Clippy does not become a neo-Nazi.
Good.
Oh, good.
It's evolving.
Now, if only, Tanis, if only Clippy could take care of us and speak to us in a nice, soothing voice, right?
What?
Well, we have Twitch for that, right?
Okay.
Hello?
All right, fair enough. Star Trek reference. Star Trek reference. All right, let's start with some achievements. Earth, start us off.
All right, so on January 12th, Aelio Sith got 99 agility. Atmohua got 99 farming. Izant got 120 ranged. Jakir got 120 agility. Cubond 008 got 99 divination. Explonia got 99 divination. Z got 120 construction. And I'm not sure how to say this one. Shane?
You know how to say it. Do the inflection. There you go.
Got 99 farming on January 12th, and I was there.
You were there. We'll talk about that after. Next up, Mr. M got 99 Herblore on the 11th. Rex Compidium got 99 Agility, also on the 11th. We then have Twisted Soul with 99 Fishing, Donna with 99 Crafting on the 10th, as well as Duke Juker with 120 Archaeology, and Cubond 008 with 99 Farming. Then on the 9th, we have Atmohua with 99 Invention, Delta Polo with 99 Runecrafting, Luminos with 120 Farming, Skips with 120 Archaeology, or 99 Archaeology rather, and Expelonia with 99 Magic.
We have, on January the 8th, Avocadoed with 200 million Constitution, Rex Competent with 99 Archaeology, and also 99 Slayer. On January the 7th, we had Atmohua with 99 Thieving on a bit of a roll there. Cubon 008, 99 Fishing, also on a roll. Uber Plastic, 99 Slayer.
And Tanis, take us home.
All right. Well, Atmohua was not done there. Went ahead and got 99 Divination. This is all on the 6th. Darkest Night got 99 Fishing. Ripiff got 99 Woodcutting. Uber Plastic with 99 Thieving, and Vivian with 99 Agility.
Nicely done, everybody. And just because I got in trouble last week for forgetting him, Earth, what have you been up to this week on RS?
There you go, much better. I've actually not been doing a lot this week. While we've been doing the show, I've done a lot of water rune crafting. Let's see how much I've made. This is in the course of like the last half of the show. I've made 32,000 water runes, which is 6 mil. It's like in the past half hour, if that.
Water rune crafting is amazing in terms of profit that we can have these
days. And I had a ton of Wicked Hood teleports just in my bank.
Oh yeah, that'll do it. That'll do it.
Other than that, I haven't really done much.
All right. Fair enough.
Did some mini quests. Finishing up the ports one or the Eastern Lands one.
Okay. That's good.
So.
Yeah, those were always a little bit itchy, scratchy, I found.
What?
It just didn't feel right. But anyways.
Itchy, scratchy.
Yeah. Yeah, they just didn't feel right.
Fascinating.
Questscaping, how about you?
I've been doing the same thing I do every week in RuneScape. Week after week, I've been mini-gaming. Yeah, so this week I was doing a bunch of Castle Wars, a bunch of Pest Control. Pest Control is really nice and... really nice and easy to do on mobile, honestly. It's
interesting.
So even the layout is relatively unimpeded by the mobile layout, unlike some mini games. And yeah, you just go around, smash some mobs, smash some portals, done.
Do people still nice play it if it's not on Spotlight?
Most of the rewards are thoroughly devalued now, but on Spotlight it is nice and fun and good fella, and there's a consistent Spotlight player base who have no option but to actually play, so that's nice.
All right, sounds good to me. How about you, Tanis?
I started the laborious task of turning all of this ore into bars.
We got about a month left before double XP, so it should be time, right?
You know, we'll get there when we get there. Otherwise, I worked and tried out the old croc hunter hunting. And like I said, I was actually much, much happier with it. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Nice and smooth. As for me this week on RS, as you probably saw from the achievements list, I got 99 farming on the alt. That is the skilling alt. So what I'm currently going for right now is 80 divination to unlock more porters and tick off one of the invention requirements, because I really don't want to push archaeology beyond level 70-ish. I'm currently at 60 without having access to porters for the materials, just because of how intense some of the sites get with how far away the deposit carts are. So I wanted porters. So I think my next push over there is 80 archaeology, but on the main, just some hunting at the croc place and more PVM, of course, which this week included a raid strip with two specific raids encounters, so I'm actually enjoying that a lot. So that's what I've been up to on RS as well. And I think the next PVM thing that I'm going to do is going to be a Magister Reaper task. That's one of the ones I haven't killed yet. I don't know if anybody here has any opinions on the Magister, yes or no.
I can do that one.
Looks dumb.
Okay. You've done that one, Tanis?
Yeah.
Okay. How is it?
Not bad.
Okay. All right.
I like anything that I can smash, Hulk smash, and that works.
Oh, and I also got my first couple of Telos skills on the weekend as well.
Nice.
Didn't go to 100% in Rage yet, which is where everybody says the full fight starts, but it was just a Reaper test, so I figured I'd go and see a bit of sampling. But I could definitely see that continuing there for a streak as well. So... like I said, 8 months ago, I didn't imagine I'd be in that boat where I'd be actually hunting out PVM and whatnot. But this weekend, I'm actually going to try and do raids again and maybe go to some elite dungeons. We'll see. So
good luck.
But that's what I've been up to on RS. And
oh, hey.
What?
92 runecrafting.
There you go.
Congratulations. Halfway
there.
Woo. And I think that unlocks soul runes as well.
Soul runes is 90. He's already there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, soul runes is fun.
Shane, do you even know this game?
It was either 90, 91, or 92. I know 91 is devil runecrafting. I thought it could have been 92, but... lo and behold.
Well, you thought wrong, mister.
That's what we got. But that's it for this episode of Update.
Runes are 90.
We'll be back next week for more. So we'll see you then, everybody. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can do it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Pocket Casts, practically anything. If your podcast client allows you to leave a rating and a review, please do that. That helps us out in terms of discoverability. And of course, we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/rsbnb. Give us a like and subscribe there. That helps the channel out. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBnb Update. Take care, everyone.
See you all next year.
See ya.